Hey, everybody. Welcome to the July podcast, Crew Call Volume 2-7. And I have a very special guest tonight, one of my old podcasting buddies, Jimmy Simmons of, among other things, Monster Model Works. How you doing, Jimmy?
I'm doing well, Mike. Thanks for having me on this time.
Well, you know what? We've done this a couple times, haven't we, bud?
many years worth, yes. It was a lot of fun.
You know, I couldn't even tell you really how many years we were on the Scotty Mason show together, but it's got to be, what, 3 or 4 or more, maybe?
I think it was a little more than 4. I think so.
Yeah, at least. And, of course, I came on as a guest at first, and then after Dave Frary left, I kind of slid right in there, you know, so you got to keep an eye on me. I do things like that.
Well, Scotty made some changes, and you popped on, and then after a while, I popped on, and then Scott popped off.
Well, this is already the second iteration of my show here. So you know, it's a moving target, but you know what? You got to be flexible. You got to roll with the changing times, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you stay the same all the time, people are going to get bored with it, right? So.
How could they be bored if you and I are having a conversation? That's the real question.
Well, so my wife would answer otherwise, but
well, she hasn't met me, I don't think. the impetus for this, of course, is it's kind of a saga, right? This is the saga of the Ransom Building, and I guess the subtitle is how I single-handedly kind of berated you back into the model making business. So,
well, let me clarify something here, because that's 100% true statement. But when you first sent me the building, I had no clue it was called Ransom.
Ah.
And so after the first bunch of, we'll get into it, mistakes and so forth and miscommunications, I get an email from you that started with Ransom. And right. I thought you were saying that I was holding you ransom for the building. So the whole time I kept seeing that subject line, I'm like, you know, Mike is just mad at me.
So that's how I got your attention? You'll have to remember that. That could work with other people.
No, but honestly, that's exactly what I thought it was.
Oh, that's too funny.
Hey, what's going on with the ransom there, you know?
Just so people understand.
Then I realized it was the building, and I had a good laugh at myself. So.
And actually, it's not really the building. It's the town that the building is in. It's in Ransom, Pennsylvania. And the building in my era, it's had a number of different names. It's been called Cascade Tissue. Suwannee Paper is another name for it. In my era, it's the Potlatch Paper Company. And, you know, it was that name for a few years, and I managed to find a logo someplace. So I'll have to be making a sign for this building at some point. We're kind of getting ahead of the curve here. So long-term listeners may recall that over 2 years ago, Scott and I were talking about this, and I was whining about the fact that this building had a lot of windows. And normally, a building of this nature, I'm a kind of a plastics guy, so I would have just kitbashed it in plastic out of either brick sheet or other buildings, and it would have been kind of sort of close to what the actual building is. But I just never developed sufficient enthusiasm for cutting out, you probably know the number, but you know, dozens and dozens of window openings that have to be perfect, because it's a masonry building and the window fits inside the opening. So if these openings weren't all perfect, basically the building was going to look like crap, you know? So when I was whining about that to Scott, he said, well, you know, I've got a laser and I would love to use this as a test bed to learn how to use it better. And I worked with Scott based on some pictures that I had sent him to try to develop the building proportions. And you saw some of that stuff, you know. He came up with some kind of a rudimentary CAD drawing, and I had sent a spreadsheet that had the physical dimensions and the names of the tissue windows and the dimensions of the openings that I was going to need. And, you know, what did I know? I just figured you feed that into the thing and it cuts it out and away we go. And Scott tried, he fooled around with it. I don't know how many different, you know, burnings or cuttings or whatever you guys call it. And he was never happy with the result that he was getting. And then both of us got busy. You know, Scott got busy with his baseball career and a new job and a new wife. And I was building an addition and, you know, life moves on. The whole thing just fell completely off the radar, you know. And then I was at the New England meet, New England proto meet, talking to, of all people, Jimmy Lincoln. And, you know, I was, I don't know how we got on the subject because we talked, you know, we were just kind of catching up and talking about a bunch of things. And Jim Lincoln said, you know, you should just talk to Jimmy and just pay him to cut the thing because he said, whatever it takes him to cut it, A, you won't have to wait for Scott, and B, you know, it'll save you the time that it would have taken to painstakingly cut out all those window openings. So when I contacted you at that time about it, as I recall, you were right on the verge of getting out of the Monster Model Works business, and things were kind of hectic in your life. I don't know if you were moving or changing jobs or both, but you could talk about that in a sec. But you did cut the thing for me based on Scott's drawing, which proved to be, let's just call it some scale, but we never did figure out what it was. And you produced a building that had the openings and basically was kind of like a junior version of what it would be, but it sure was an HO. And at that point, I just kind of thought, this building is not destined to be. Because at that point, between Scott and I and all of that, we were over, might be even 2 years into it at that point. Or maybe we're just 2 years into it now. I don't know. Time flies when you're having fun. But I think you just kind of popped out of nowhere during the winter sometime. And you said, hey, I want to cut this building for you. And I you know, of course I thought, yes, this is good news. And we had many phone calls where we kind of worked through a lot of the details about how the different pieces would go together. And really, I got a lot of input from you in terms of how to structure the structure. You know what I mean? How to have each individual piece that was of the sufficient size for the material you can cut and lay out the building in such a fashion that it was buildable. And you used your experience as a kit builder, because that's what you have to do whenever you're designing a new kit, something at one time I guess you were doing almost monthly. It was an interesting process for me, kind of an iterative process. And I think I ended up sending you sample of the windows and probably a garage door and maybe even a people door. I forget exactly what I sent you. And lo and behold, the kit arrived and it looked freaking great. And basically it's like a custom kit at this point because it's got all of the, you know, the Monster Model Works corners and all of that happy stuff. And just to wrap up on the intro here, you had suggested that I fool around with the old kit, the one that was based on the Scott, some type of scale drawing, just so I could get a feel for how it all goes together. And I guess it's kind of ingenious the way you do the corners and the canopy glue. Jeez, I did a canopy glue corner and went back to it the next day. And I think I would break the wall before the corner bond would give out. I was really impressed with the bond strength. So I think this building's going to be one solid little piece of construction, you know, particularly with all the bracing. But during the course of all of these conversations that you and I had, it came to be that you had decided to sort of resurrect Monster Model Works, you know? So I think we both agreed that it would be an interesting story to kind of have you relate a bit about how that all came about. So I'll toss it back to you for a lot of that fill-in, because I know there's a lot of info here.
Well, you know, first and foremost, when I got the email from you about, hey, would you potentially want to cut one of these buildings? And this was after I had shut down and, you know.
Oh, it wasn't during, it was after, I see.
It was after, you know, you've got exhaust systems, lasers set up, all this. I had attempted to sell the business and I had, you know, initially about 20 potential buyers that were interested. That dwindled down to about 3. What most people didn't really realize is that we did an awful lot of business. It was a full-time, nonstop, 5, 6, 7 days a week, no vacation type of job. And that's ultimately why I got out of it, is because I just couldn't keep up with the production and the orders that were coming in and always having to create new structures or building materials. And I mean, I love doing all that, but it just was a point of too much. And so,
it sounds like Monster Model Works became a monster.
Yeah, it really did. And that's another reason why anybody who was really interested in it ended up not purchasing it, because they realized it was going to be a lot of work. You can only produce my brick and stone from my current lasers. I've already tried multiple other lasers and had to return them. You know, so it was one of these things where it's why I can't really even hire employees, is because teaching them the stuff takes much longer than getting the stuff just produced, right?
So it's more of an artisan kind of thing rather than a production thing.
Yeah, but when I got your email, I'm like, my lasers were spotless and clean.
Last thing you wanted to do is get everything all dirty and smoky or whatever it is, right? Did I lose you? We have no audio from Jim.
I got it set up. Did you lose me?
I did, but you're back.
I'm back now. So basically what I was saying is that my lasers were all cleaned, ready to sell. My exhaust systems were all taken apart. The pieces I had in the window for exhaust was gone. I had to rebuild that. And so I was like, no, I don't really want to do this. And
but because it's me.
Well, because it was you, you know, there is a little bit more of, since the relationship is there and I have these lasers. My wife had actually started an LLC, Larkspur Laser Art, to do, you know, different things. A lot of stuff like remembrance of past loved ones. And we could do mugs and cups and baseball bats and flash, you know, anything, you know, cylindrical and so forth. So I'm like, well, I'm going to have to get the laser set up at some point. So I might as well do this. And it'll be a good test to just sort of get things back up and going to do Mike's building.
You have two of these lasers, Jimmy?
Yeah, I have two.
Okay.
Yeah, two. I needed two. I could have used 3, actually. You know, the two did a job. And ultimately, I got it going. And then I go, and I love Scott. I mean, Scotty, he can lay out a building, draw them. He knows how to do it. But his CAD skills aren't so much there. And so normally when I get a drawing from Scott, I have to semi-redraw it anyway.
Is it part of it that he's working on an Apple platform? I mean, does that come into play?
No, it's not the platform. You know, when you draw a window, when I draw a window, I use a square tool and all 4 lines are connected. Scott draws each individual line separately.
So when you move it, it's a problem.
But they're never grouped either. So if you touch one, you know, or move it by mistake, it's out of alignment. And so that's no big deal. So right then and there, I was like, did you lose me?
No, you're back.
Okay. Yeah. You know, just then and there, I'm like, all right, well, one, I have to redraw Scott's drawing. 2, I have to overlay my brick to your walls. And then I have to move those windows accordingly, slightly up or down to make sure that they're fitting within the mortar lines.
Oh, right.
And, you know, so there's a lot of pre-setup with, you know, the foundation piece and the different sills.
Last thing I heard was different sills. This is not a typical podcast, folks. Usually our audio is spot on, but here I am filling dead air, waiting for Jimmy to come back.
Hello. Okay, yeah. I'm back. Yeah, I don't understand
what's happening there.
Zoom, that's why I wanted to call in. But so ultimately, you know, after the layout work was done, I get two files from you, and one was a PDF. The PDF was called version 7, and the Illustrator file was called version 8. And you know what? Since I wasn't in the mood to even cut the thing for you, I'm just like, hey, I'm taking version 8. I'm going to, you know, I was told it was all brick, so I laid brick on everything, and I cut it, and I sent it to you. And it was like 40% smaller than what it should have been. And heck, version 7.
I knew I was screwed when I saw the box, because I thought, this box isn't big enough.
Yeah. And version 7 was the PDF, and that was to the right size. So here it was, pulling teeth to get me to do it in the first place. And when I find out it's all wrong, I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Right.
This is what is going on? And then I went and looked.
I'll bet that's not all you said.
No, I wasn't too mad. But, you know, then I looked at it and I said, okay, the PDF, it's definitely different size. And then, you know, we got on the phone and we conferred that, yes, those are the right sizes. And since it was so much larger, that changed everything.
I mean, sure.
You know, one of those pieces were longer than 24 inches. And so we had to, you know, I had to, you know, cut that in half. And then we had to find ways to, we talked about building the other.
We've lost Jimmy again, folks. Not sure if we can continue at this rate, because the whole idea of a podcast is you need to hear who's speaking. So maybe I can have him call in on his phone, because I'd hate to lose what we already did. And yet, right now, we've got nothing.
Am I back?
Yeah, what's going on there? Do you need to call in on your phone?
No, my Chromebook does this. My phone wouldn't work when we tried to call. My Chromebook does this to me even when I'm on business calls, and I don't know why, because every other platform like Teams and so forth works fine. And so it gets irritating.
Well, you know what I'll do? I'll open up a chat window and tell you when you're not there.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be fine. And so when we got it, after we talked, I found out that it's not all brick. Some of it was clapboard siding. Some of it was concrete block.
Right.
And so
it helped once you saw photos and things, you know. And
yeah, but my fault in the beginning was just taking it, laying the brick, doing what you wanted with the rest of it, just cutting it willy-nilly and sending it to you. When there really was no plan on how you were going to build it, or what needed to happen with corners and other intersections of the different walls.
Right. And I have to admit, it was a very interesting process to kind of work with you, because you had plenty of all the right questions. And, you know, that interactive process I found very interesting, because I had never really worked with a kit builder before in that fashion.
Well, and I had a look at it as if it was a kit that I was going to manufacture, because if whoever I'm doing a custom project for, and you know, a lot of them are real simple, four walls and some windows, that's easy. But you know, yours, you had to have a plan behind it. It was never going to go together. So after it was wrong, we waited a while, and I was just like, man, I don't want to redo this. I have to do all this stuff over again. And then I'm like, well, I can't leave Mike hanging. I mean, that's just not me. That's rude. It's, you know, I agreed to do this. So, you know, we sat down, we had those conversations, and we got it done. And I think it's going to look great once it's built and painted. And Canopy Glue is the only glue I recommend to use. It's the only glue I use.
It's incredible.
Well, you know, the real neat thing is since it has some kind of in their ingredients, some kind of vinyl acetate, I'm guessing that this is what it does. Once it's cured, it actually repels washes and alcohol and water versus loosening up those joints and removing that glue that's there.
Sure.
And so it just really does the trick. But, you know, so after all that, you know, we're still lagging on doing anything for my wife's business. she works, you know, and I work, and it's just been crazy. And I said, you know, I've got all of this leftover stock that I still have, some kits and some you know, building materials. And I started selling some of that stuff. Just, you know, some friends would text me and say, hey, do you have this or what do you got? And I'll buy it from you. And I said, you know what? We got the LLC set up. People have always been pestering me in a good way to get them brick and, you know, road material and all this other stuff out. And I said, well, since Monster Model Works was officially shut down with the IRS and everything, I want to do it right and do it legal. I'm just going to sell Monster Model Works brand through my wife's company.
Sure, why not?
And it solved the problem of making sure that, you know, we're not just doing it under the table and things like that. That's never a good thing to do when you're doing this type of stuff. And so,
were you surprised at the response?
Oh, you know, it was so funny. Is I ultimately, because I'm in digital marketing, I turned on the Monster Model Works Facebook page back on because I wanted to look at some settings that my clients would have to be dealing with and just to be more familiar with it. And
as soon as you did,
turning it on didn't do anything to anybody, but I went in and I removed Monster Model Works website from it because that was down at the time. And I took my old phone number. I took the phone number off of there, just making a change. And that pumped it out to everybody because I made a change. And next thing you know, I was inundated literally with probably 700 or 800 text messages, people type, you know, posting stuff on the site. And I said, well, I have plenty of time. I don't do anything on the weekends. I don't do anything usually in the evenings. I'm back to playing a bit of guitar and trying to work with a band here locally. And
you are one of those high energy type guys anyway, aren't you?
No, I just act really good around it and try to keep myself. but at that point I said, hey, I'm going to do it at my pace. I'm going to put up stuff that I'll make on the weekends, and then I'll put up stuff and as it sells. And then, you know, now I'm putting up a few more kits. We just put up the REA building some other stuff. We've got 4 or 5 different HO kits, an S-scale kit online, bunch of building materials.
It must be entirely different, though, to not have the pressure of, hey, I'm making my living doing this. I need to make new product all the time.
Oh, yeah, that changed everything. So now doing it on my terms, you know, I post up, you know, I'll be like, hey, going to put up a few of these kits. People come in and buy the kits. I've already got them mostly made. They go out the next week. And it's been nice because if I get busy or I got to go on a business trip, I don't have to sell the product. I don't have to put extra things up. So it's been slow getting new items up, and people are always there, you know, right through the new website. You can actually, you know, hit pop up a little message box at the bottom and start chatting with me. And they're asking for different things, and, you know, new mailing lists will be on this website. So you'll have want to get on that. You have to sign in from there. And it's just been really nice. And we've been, I mean, I've had people call me, go, hey man, when are you going to have stuff in stock? I said, well, I put stuff up, new stuff every week. And he goes, well, it doesn't matter. Hey, this guy actually texted me. It doesn't matter if you put new stuff up every week, if it's not available. I said, hey man, it sells really fast. So I just put up some more stuff this morning. So, you know, jump on if that's what you want. I mean, I just, you know, it sells fast.
Would you accept an advance order from somebody so that they can be sure to get it?
Yes, I do. There are folks who have said, hey, when you get a chance, can you make me, you know, 8 sheets of this type of stone or brick? And I say, no problem. I said, once I have that stuff ready, I'll let you know, because I'm not going to take anyone's money up front. And, you know, usually it's in a week or two that, you know, I can get to something like that for somebody. But it's been the kits. The kits, you know, have been running very well. They've been selling well. And you know, like I said, it's been really nice. Actually, both of my lasers, each one does a separate part of the job. One laser is better for one thing. The other laser is better for something else.
Oh, I thought they were the same.
They are the same, but
but they're not.
No, you would think they're the same. The
same model.
They're the same model, the same wattage. I had just, when I bought the new laser, it had a brand new tube with it, obviously. And at that time, my first laser was ready for a new tube. So I bought a new tube, same wattage for that laser. So here I am, I'm like, perfect. I got two lasers with two brand new tubes and I'm ready to go. And the new laser is way hotter than the old laser with the new tube. And I called Epilog and I said, what's up with this?
Right.
And they said, listen, no two tubes are the same, regardless when how you get them. And you are going to need different settings for each machine simply because of that. And they said, if you want, send me back that tube. We'll send you another one to see if it made a difference. And of course it didn't. Hmm. And so one laser does a great job at like the concrete sheets and, you know, cutting the laser board windows. And the other does a better job, I think, doing brick and stone and stuff. So I have two of them running. But right now I still only have one exhaust set up. And so I'm switching exhaust from one laser to the next, going, man, I got to get off my butt and cut another hole in this piece of wood and send the exhaust tube out so I can just run two lasers at the same time.
So what happens if one of those lasers goes down? I mean, is that it?
No, not at all. I can run the brick and stone on the other laser, no problem. It's just I had to figure out a whole new set of settings for that laser, which I did.
You'd have to recalibrate, basically.
Well, in the settings, you're turning up power and speed and making adjustments so that, you know, one laser may be running at 100 speed while the other laser may be running at 85 speed to get the same results or a different power setting on it. So I then just said, great, one of my lasers is going to do this. My other lasers are going to do that because I have to do it anyway. And it just made it real easy for me to get stuff out and done. So
you had sent me a little video that I tossed onto the podcast group showing the actual laser cutting happening, which was kind of cool. So when you say you have an exhaust from these lasers, is that just basically the smoke from the burning of the wood?
Yes. We have air compressors into each one of the lasers, which sends a bolt of air down on top of the material to keep, you know, the thicker you cut something, more chance of a flame up or fire you can have.
Oh, wow.
So this is constantly blowing on it. And at the same time, if we didn't have an exhaust system, the room would fill with smoke.
I see.
Just because it's burning wood or whatever it's burning. So we have a couple of big exhaust fans that you have a 4-inch tube and it sucks it out of each laser and then blows it out into the backyard. And it's so nice because once it gets out to the backyard, once you're 10 feet away from the tube, you really don't smell anything. It just
right.
That fast. And, you know, I've done this in communities with neighbors left and right of me all the time and no one notices anything. So
it's not like you're a factory, right?
Yeah.
But you know what's cool? When you open a Monster Model Works box, you can smell it. You know what I mean? It's got that cool smell to it. It's a nice smell, I think.
But here's the fun. Carl Osolinski, great modeler. He had been contacting me before all this, just saying, hey, I'm about to run out of your brick sheets. And it's the only brick I want to really use. You think you might be able to make me a few sheets? And I got back to him. I said, no problem. And when he got the material that I sent him, he posted it on Facebook. And even's like, man, not only does it look the same great stuff, but it smells the same. This is
right.
So cool. I mean, it's you're etching wood, and it's going to have a scent to it. And,
but, you know, it's been you know, it's traveled several days and thousands of miles, but it's like that fresh burn smell.
Yeah, well, you know, it's vacuum, not vacuum sealed, but it's sealed in a bag.
That's true. You lock all it in for freshness.
Yeah. Well, one of the issues I had to deal with here in Colorado in the Springs area is it's so dry, much drier than California was when we
really?
Were there. Oh, yeah.
I would have thought just the opposite. I mean, you were down near San Diego, right?
No. It's much drier here. I've got to keep chapstick in my pocket almost all year round.
Wow.
And the problem is my wood comes from Massachusetts, where it's very moist. And when it gets here, it would dry, it would start to dry out, and some of my material would actually start to bend, start to warp on the long, in the linear side of it. It would just be like a little U-shape.
No
and I was getting really irritated. I was keeping stuff on it. And it was funny, when I stopped the business, a lot of that wood that I had left over was stuff that I wasn't going to use because...
Oh. Jimmy went out. Sending up a flare. And he'll be back shortly. This is the saga of the Chromebook, apparently. So as much as I like to rag on Windows, maybe it's the Chromebook.
Now, here we go. We're back.
Okay.
What I was saying was...
With almost the like wood it times out.
Yeah, it's weird. With the wood being kind of warped, after the year and a half or so of not doing it, and it was just sitting in the atmosphere, it was all flat and straight as an arrow. It was like, oh, maybe
so
that's
like,
what I got to do.
So by it fixed itself.
Because it acclimated to the dryness.
Sure.
You know? And so it's like, okay, so this is what we got to do. We got to.
It's almost like you could benefit from a humidifier, you know, just to kind of maintain some sort of happy medium in the room.
You know, that would be good, but the house I'm in right now, which is we're going to be buying later this year, something smaller, it's ginormous for just me and my wife. And the basement that we're in, it's the size of a single story home all by itself downstairs. So I tried a small humidifier and kept it right by the wood and it didn't do a darn thing.
Oh, wow.
You know, but what was really cool is when I turned everything back on, I just turned it back on, used my old settings and let it run.
And it worked.
I put one of these, the bonded warehouse kit out. I said, oh, I got 3D printing to do for this. And all I had done before was turn my 3D printer off and has kept it off ever since. And I said, well, I'm going to just turn it on and send the file to it and let's see what happens. And it just went just like a champ.
Really?
Exactly what it was supposed to do. So it was just like, you know, going back in time and flipping the switch on everything. And it's been neat sort of getting back to it, because what's great for me now is I'm rethinking product. I haven't released any N-scale brick yet because my Z-scale guys love my N-scale brick, and I think my N-scale brick's a little too small, even though it's to scale. So I'm thinking of, you know, revamping that a little bit, other products that I hated producing that I know I'll never produce again, and then just ways to look at other, you know, you had time to think, and now that you're restarting it, I can go back and go, hey, you know, how do I want to readjust this to make it better?
Right. You don't want to hate doing it.
No, but there were products that just weren't fun to make. I mean, they were a great idea at the time when I was doing it. And
what makes it not fun?
I don't think it was fun. I think it's a wrong word. I don't think that I was truly happy with the product,
even though
the people I would show it to and everyone who got it was like, oh my goodness, this is awesome. And I'm going, no, it can be better. But there was
you weren't impressed with it.
Yeah, you know, I created so many products I never released because I could not find a way to paint it and weather it to make it look the way I wanted it to look. So I would just shelf it. I've got so much different stone and different brick and you name it that to me just didn't come out right when painting. And if I couldn't teach someone a very simple way to paint it and weather it, then I wasn't going to release it as a product.
That sample photo that you sent me the other day was interesting because it was all like gray tones, but it looked like brick. Like, in other words, you had it colored like it was going to be stone, but it looked like brick. Did I see it wrong?
No, you saw it correctly. I had that piece sitting on my desk, and I'm in the middle of, just for fun for myself, I'm in the middle of building a stacked stone cabin. And the way I do my stone, I start with black and then I dry brush white or a tan over the top and then add different colorings to it. And I always used, you know, from what's his name? New England brownstone there, Russ Green.
Yeah.
He always had the technique of using this ink. And when you mix it with water, it's straight black. And so, hold on.
Jimmy's gone, but he'll be back. We've got the drill now. I just tell him he's gone, and then he finds out, and he sprinkles a little Eye of Newt on his Chromebook, and then he comes back.
Oh, you know, it's, you know, craziness. But so Russ Green had always said, you know, with this particular ink, and I forget if it's an acrylic ink or an oil-based ink. I think it's acrylic. You mix it with water, and it's straight black. But if you mix it with rubbing alcohol, it has shades of greens and yellows and blacks in it. It's really neat.
Interesting.
And so I always use that as a base for my stone. Paint everything this black, greeny, yellowish tone, and then I would do my colorings over that. And when I went to grab my ink from before, it was all dried out. And I didn't have any, so I was testing a new technique of using black and green paint mixed as the base, and then doing my dry brushing over the top. And then so I tried it on a piece of brick. And that's happened when you were complaining, when you were like, I'm not happy with my corners. I'm like, dude, your corners look great. Wait till you paint it. You know, that's when that little line you see disappears. And I was showing you in the photo that, see what happens. And that's why it looked all gray. I was just doing some tests. Actually, I was actually painting that building today.
I had to really zoom that photo to even find the line. So not that I doubted you, but, you know, until you see it, I just wasn't certain about the, you know, the quality of my joint there. But, you know, I have to say, just, it was a great idea for you to have me fool around with the 40% kit, because I was able to very, very quickly get the methodologies that we had talked about on our Zoom call when we were just kind of reviewing everything, you know. It's not that difficult, but, you know, and I think the way that you designed it is awfully clever, because the alternative would be to try to make some kind of a 45, which would be nearly impossible to get right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't want to bother with that. I thought about that in the beginning. That's how the corner pieces came in. I wasn't going to be able to cut it that way. And I knew my modeling customers weren't going to be able to do it with satisfaction. So you just got to come up with another way to do it.
Well, my goal was going to be to basically take July and build this building. And last month, I kind of got into a bent where I was working on old locomotive projects. And when I say old, I mean some of them went back to 2007, believe it or not. Wow. I looked at some of the research that was in the boxes for these things. And I said, you know what? I have to do this stuff while my eyes are still good. And I hadn't worked on locomotives in ages and ages and ages, measured in many years, really, which is nuts. I prefer to be more well-rounded, you know, in terms of what I'm working on in the hobby. But you know, when you build an addition and then you cut your layout in pieces and move it all apart and then you want to join it all back together, it was just like all layout all the time for over 2 years, maybe even 4 years, really. So it's nice to get back to these locomotives, and I've already churned out about 8 of them. And I have about another 10 or so to go, believe it or not. But I was going to shift over to building the building last week. Except that last weekend, I went to open a door. I was actually picking up my wife's car at the service bay. And when I went to pull open the door, I kind of like reached under the handle and pulled. And I felt like this bolt of lightning go up my ring finger. And I badly sprained that right hand ring finger tendon. Shot right up into the forearm. And by the next day, my hand had swollen up and I had like bruising in the palm of my hand. And that was a week ago. And I've sort of been fighting this stupid thing ever since. So needless to say,
I have just opening the door?
Yep. So you know what that tells me? I'm at the age now where nothing is safe. I guess I have tendons like old elastic bands, you know?
Well, I tell you what, before I shut the company down, before, I could see like an eagle. I up close, I might use a visor or something, but I never needed glasses. But right now, my computer, anything I'm writing, reading, I need reading glasses. So it's really...
How old are you now, Jimmy?
Oh, I'll be 50 this year.
Oh, you'll be... Well, that's right about when the decline starts. So you're ready for it now.
No, I'm not. We have like 8 pairs of reading glasses all throughout the house just to make sure we can grab one.
That's what I did too. I believed in defense in depth. So at any given time, there's one somewhere within arm's reach. And like you say, there's probably about 8 of them, so you can find them.
Yeah. Now with wearing masks, they're all fogging up on me. And it's like, oh, come on, man, I'm trying to work here.
They say that if you use windshield washer solution on your glasses, that won't happen.
No, okay, I'll try that.
Yeah, it's worth trying. So,
Mike, you know, enough about me, because you know what? I'm going to be doing some Facebook Lives on how to build with the corners, another one on how to paint here. I'm planning those.
When you do those, by the way, put a notice on the podcast group, because I'm sure
the listeners
will be interested in that.
I'll also set up an event so people can sort of know when it's coming. And then that'll always be on the Facebook page for people to watch. So that'll be great. But ultimately, I mean, we haven't talked a lot, but what's been going on with you with other things, man?
Well, and you and I haven't really talked about the layout all that much, but no. I don't know if you had heard any of the older podcasts. I mean, you know, recent older podcasts where I was talking about that huge scene that I was working on, with the Kerr McGee Thai treatment plant and Avoca Yard and the Taylor secondary. But, you know, it was a scene that was maybe, I'm just going to say 8x8. It's not the exact dimensions, but, you know, a big, deep area that I needed to scenic from the inside out. Never done anything like that before. And it flies in the face of conventional layout building wisdom. Needless to say, I don't really have to get into the interior of it very often. And I do have some access hatches that I designed in that I haven't had to use yet, but I have tested. But there's something about a deep scene like that that is different from what you would normally see on your layout with the usual, you know, 2 or so feet deep scene from a photography standpoint. But moreover, from a stand there and experience the scene standpoint, it's very, very different. And unintentionally, if you're standing in the right spot, the scene kind of seamlessly blends into a peninsula on the other side of an aisle, and you can't see the aisle at all, and you can't even really be aware of the space. So you have this incredible depth of trees, which looks like it goes on for miles. And I'd like to say that I planned all that out in advance, but really it's one of those happy accidents, you know. But as soon as I stood there and looked at it, I thought, okay, that looks like Pennsylvania. We're going to call that mission accomplished. You know, that was such a big effort to do. That was when I decided to take some time off and do just run the layout for a while. And there was that month of just operating, basically, that Confalone and I talked about a couple of podcasts ago. And then I moved on to the locomotive project that I would have liked to have finished by now, but really I could use another month if I want to finish it. Cause you know, you get into like a particular thing that you're doing and you have all that stuff out, all the tools for doing that are out, the decal materials, the detail parts, especially the detail parts, right? All of that is out. And I think to myself, do I really want to put all of this stuff away only to have to drag it out again at some point in the future? It was easier just to stay on the locomotives. Plus I found that I could, in the last week, I found I could work on projects like that without bothering my hand. I'm not positive I'm going to be able to do the amount of sanding I want to do without impacting my tendon a little bit. So I figured I'd give it another couple of weeks to hopefully heal more before
I know. I get my forearm will be like, oh, after doing a whole bunch of stuff with the sanding on those walls. It's
right.
It gets you.
I think what I'm going to have to do is say, you know what, I'm going to do 20 minutes of sanding today, and then I'm going to go back to my locomotives. You know what I mean? So I'm not doing it all at once.
You know,
it's such a huge building that, you know, I could spend days just doing that.
You know, what's most important is, you know, when you build my buildings, the fit and finish happens first. When you build, you know, a clapboard structure from, you know, one of the other kit manufacturers, the fit and finish happens after you paint and weather everything. You kind of put everything together. So that sanding and making sure the corners are flush really matters at that point in time. So the more effort you put into it, the better it's going to be in the end.
Yeah, I don't want to rush that process. So, you know, maybe what I'll do is do like, you know, two joints and then give my arm or my hand a break and go back to the model desk. Because I'm building this in my workshop because, again, it's so freaking huge that I really want to build it on top of my table saw, you know, big, yeah, contiguous flat surface to do that with. But I think that's what like I'm going to do. I think I'm going to – what's that?
It's going to be like 42 inches long when it's done. I mean, it's huge.
Well, I got a kick out of your narration of the thing when you were laying it out. You said, this is a big building, Mike. It's not your typical Monster Model Works kit, right?
No, like I said, we can do anything. It's just, you know, what is it? And, you know, Jake Johnson had sent me this big station the other day. He's like, hey, I got a customer that wants me to custom build these for him. You think you'd make it a kit? I'm like, absolutely not. he's like, why? And I went through why. And he's like, oh my goodness, I just learned something, because he's working with another kit manufacturer and been doing stuff. And he's like, now I understand a little bit more why you'll do something or not do something, you know, production reasons, pricing reasons. I mean, all these different factors have to come into play. And some things just, they're better off to be scratch-built one-offs than a kit.
Well, you know, I had sent you an email saying that already somebody contacted me that would be interested in buying a version of this Ransom building. You didn't respond, and I'm wondering if that's why.
No, you know, maybe I just missed. I remember reading it, and I said to myself, well, one, I can cut them and send them the same stuff I sent to Mike, but the person who wants it is going to have to build it. I'm not writing instructions and going to go through the whole setup for one building, right?
Right?
If not, you're going to have to charge, you know, an arm and a leg for it.
That's a whole different kettle of fish. So, I guess you could think of it as raw materials, you know, at that point for the guy, but without having to cut out all of the windows, and I could tell him what.
Now I'm back.
You're back. I could tell him what windows and doors.
Right, but to get. Here's my ultimate concern. My ultimate concern is, someone spends good money on something, and I know that if they don't know what they're doing or not going to put the time into it, it's going to turn out not so good.
Uh-oh. How's this for scintillating podcast airtime? The sound of me typing to Jimmy, the last thing that I heard. But he'll be back.
Yeah, am I back now?
Yep, you're back. You're back.
I just don't want someone to get something that they can't build.
Right.
Or have it not turn out, and then they go, well, look, Jimmy's stuff doesn't match up, or it's not so good. You know, it's part of it is me, you know. I was just saying, you know, I don't have the confidence in someone having success and spending good money.
Yeah, it might be different if they were an experienced builder of your kits. Now, I'm not, but I don't think I'm going to have any trouble doing it, because it looks very well designed in terms of how it's supposed to go together. And I really think that, you know, this area that it's going in is kind of the last eyesore portion of the original layout in the basement. And it's kind of a weird area, because it stretches from Tunkhannock, which was, I think, the last thing I had completed in that room, all the way to the former outside door. And it actually crosses in front of the electrical panels, and I need to devise some kind of removable thing to disguise that as well. But because this building is so long, plus it's got like a steel building across the tracks that I'll need an overhead pipe bridge to get to, you know, that's sort of a Pike Stuffy kind of thing. That'll go together in a snap. But when this building gets planked down in that location, the scene is going to finish itself. You know what I mean?
Because
it's just going to dominate that whole scene. And everything's going to look right, and I'll be highly motivated to do all the ground cover and ballasting and finish that area. And then I'll have a a contiguously finished section that's the entire back wall of my house. You know, this is the missing piece there. So it's going to be a huge impact thing.
And knowing that you're a master builder to begin with and scratch building and different things, I didn't have an issue with thinking that you weren't going to be able to do it, but I'm dying to see it because to me right now, all I see is one big building, all the same color of some wood color that isn't going to be what the final thing is. Right.
Right.
That's where the magic comes.
Well, this is not going to be a shake the box kit kind of a deal. I mean, this is, I'm not going to rush it. In part because I want it to come out right, but also because I just want to thoroughly enjoy the process of building this, you know. And I think there's a lot of attention to detail that this thing is going to need because it's not just the monster components that go into it, but, you know, I have to figure out, all those windows need to be done and all kinds of roof detailing and piping on the outside of the building, all kinds of stuff around the plant needs to be done. So I really think this could easily be a 2-month project to build it, detail it, integrate it into the scene.
And oh, I agree.
I think, you know, and so you only do ransom once. Why rush it? You know what I mean? It's not like, people say, geez, you know, you work at this like it's a job. And I say, no, I'm just very productive when I do set my mind to work on something. I just kind of march through it, but I never want to rush it because most of the things that you're doing on a custom layout like this, that's the only time you're doing it. You know, you're going to move on to something else that requires completely different techniques and completely different approaches. So I want to make sure that I'm not one of these, I want to get this done and out of the way kind of guys. I've even made a friend of making trees, Jimmy. You know, I don't even mind making trees anymore. But I guess after that many thousands of trees, you'd better make a friend of it, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but that's what makes the layout. I mean, you know, the details.
Right. I just had one question that I didn't get a chance to inject it into earlier, because you'd said that one of the kits that you were redoing required some 3D printing. And I was impressed that you just turned it on and it worked, because a lot of people I know that have 3D printers, it's like owning an old MG, you know, you're just working on the thing all the time. You're tweaking it all the time. Our buddy Craig Biesgeier is always rebuilding his. There's always something that seems to be going wrong with it. When you were using it in as part of your kit production, did you find it to be pretty reliable during that whole time?
Yeah, you know, it was a machine. At one point, I had to replace the head, just got too clogged, but I had done so much printing for the San Diego Model Railroad Museum. I mean,
yeah, I remember you doing that, yeah.
Yeah, hundreds of hours of printing. You know, my machine is obsolete. It's a dinosaur. It was bought, you know, 6-7 years ago. It's a MakerBot Replicator 2.
It's probably like a tank though, huh?
Yeah, it just works. But it's not going to print anything in high detail. It's good for, you know, downspouts and platforms and iron wall anchors and little things that make the kit. So I don't have to go elsewhere for them. But if I get this thing going, I like to get a resin printer that can really do some really nice detailed work too. It might be something good down the road. And they're not that expensive anymore. So it's a 3D drawing that matters.
Sure, sure. Garbage in, garbage out. Well, that's really good, you know. And I think that, you know, we might have some potential to revisit at some point once we maybe when I'm ready to unveil the structure, you know. But something tells me I might have a question or two during the 2 months of fooling around with it. I don't be surprised if I send you a text.
No, I would be surprised if you didn't, because to me, I know you care a lot about this stuff and you're going to have questions, and you should have questions, especially when you go to start painting and some other things. So yeah, I'm always here to help no matter who needs it. So
cool. Monster Model Works. How do people buy from you? Is it something that you can maybe post some links on the podcast group? I mean, you probably have already, but you might want to do so again now so people can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. The monstermodelworks.com redirects right to Larkspur Laser Art, where we take credit cards and the items are there, breaking down in different scales with different building materials. So, you know, like I said, we're adding more, and the site is still a work in progress as I'm trying to make it better and more functional. You know, just not having a ton of time to do that, but people have been buying from it. I've been selling out on almost everything I post up, and blessed that way. You know, I love my customers.
That's good. And I assume that the Monster Model Works ad that I have on the podcast site, which should still just work then. Somebody
Absolutely.
Clicks on it. Okay.
Yep.
That's
yep.
good. That's good. Jimmy, thanks for coming on. And thanks for doing this for me, because you know what? I don't think there's any human on the planet that could have really brought this thing to fruition. So I hope to do you proud.
Oh, I'm sure you will. And I appreciate being on. And like I said, anyone has questions, email is jimmy@monstermodelworks.com still. And, you know, we're chugging along. But I can't wait to see you finish it, because I know the type of work you do. So.
All right. Well, enjoy the rest of your summer, Jimmy. And I know that people are anxiously awaiting this podcast, because they've been messaging me saying, hey, they've listened to all of them and they're working on their layout and they need another podcast to listen to. So this will be up tonight.
All right. Perfect, man. Can't wait to hear it.
Thanks, Jimmy. Take care, buddy.
Hey, you too, man.